we begin class, just to let you know, if you are interested, there are copies of this parenting manual out on the table. They are free for the taking. If you would like one for yourself or for friends or whatever, then help yourself to them. I have a lot of copies of it, and I'd just like to get them in the hands of parents who are interested in looking at how God says to raise children. That's what it's all about. So help yourself to what's out there. I've got more, so run out of those. I'll put more out there. So. Okay? You don't have to place orders, just take them. Well, I got more. I got plenty more, so don't worry about it. All right. Okay. We are still in John chapter 3 and chapter 4. We're looking at really kind of a contrast, in a sense, between conversations that Jesus has with Nicodemus and with the woman of Samaria at Jacob's well. We've been looking at this from a standpoint of insiders and outsiders. How is Jesus dealing with each one of these people differently? Nicodemus being the insider, being the Jew, the religious elite, the authority, and so on and so forth, sees eye to eye with Jesus on biblical, on biblical authority, and so forth. Comes to Jesus at night to talk with Jesus. The woman at the well is an outsider. She is a Samaritan, which in the eyes of the Jews is basically she's a half-breed. And they dislike the Samaritans even more than they dislike Gentiles. Okay? And so she is religiously, she's not anywhere close to where Jesus is. She's not even in the same ballpark. Her situation is one where, again, contrast with Nicodemus. You know, he's one of the social elites, religious elites. He's the upper class of the society. This Samaritan woman is, she's an outcast even in her own village. See? So we see then Jesus talking with each one of them and how he deals with each one differently. With Nicodemus, we talked about how Jesus used, in a sense, a kind of a direct approach. Nicodemus, honors Jesus in the introduction by saying, he calls him Rabbi. We know that you are a man of God, for no one else, a man sent from God, for no one else could do the things that you're doing unless God sent him. Jesus takes that statement, goes right to the heart of the matter, says, unless you're born again, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. Well, with the woman at the well, what we've been talking about is Jesus' approach with this outsider is more kind of along the line of, in a sense, building a bridge to her, you see, from where Jesus is to where she is, and building this bridge to connect with her, okay? As we were finishing up last week, we were talking about these different approaches, just kind of generally in dealing with insiders versus outsiders. And we talked about Peter and how he dealt with the insiders on the day of Pentecost. Okay, and then we talked about how Paul dealt with the outsiders there in Acts chapter 17, there in Athens. Two different groups, this and this woman, insiders and outsiders, that's really showing us and giving us some insight into the fact that we need to deal with insiders and outsiders differently, but then also, how do we go about doing that? What are some of the things that we can learn from Jesus and from these two examples with Peter and Paul in terms of how to deal with insiders and outsiders in different ways? And we left off with me sharing with you three basic principles, and we kind of ran through those real quick. So I want to start there and kind of go through them again and before we continue moving on here. The first one we talked about is don't use insider language with outsiders. OK? Okay? What do we mean by that?
Church talk.
Okay, church talk. You know, we have even within, you know, the churches of Christ, we have certain, you know, terms we use and phrases and so on that we use that even people who might be religious insiders in a general sense are outsiders when it comes to churches of Christ because they, you know, they're not familiar with those terms and so forth and phrases that we use. So we need to be careful of what we're saying to people, especially if they're outsiders. They don't know the language. It's like you're going to go and talk to somebody and they're speaking, you know, Spanish and you're speaking English. How well are you going to communicate? Not likely to happen, is it? See, and in a lot of ways, that's kind of you know what you know is happening when we're talking about. We're talking, you know, our language to those who don't, they don't speak religious language, you say. So we have to be kind of careful with that. The second one that we talked about was don't use the same pace. Okay? Don't use the same pace. In other words, with insiders, you know, we can be direct with them. You know, here it is, lay it on the line and say, you know, boom, you know, pay attention or whatever the case needs to be. But with outsiders, you need to be slower and more indirect. See? If you approach outsiders in this direct, in-your-face kind of a way, then most likely what's going to happen is you're going to turn them off right from the beginning and you won't have an opportunity to talk to them a second time. See? And so, again, the pace at which we do, and again, we saw that with Jesus, with Nicodemus, the insider, what did he do? Got right to the chase, go right to the heart of the matter, here it is, unless you're born again, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. Boom. Okay, but with the woman of Samaria, as we talked about, it's a slower pace, kind of gradually taking her through in this conversation, building this bridge. Okay? And then, the third one we left off with was know your location. Your turf or theirs. You see? You know, and that has a lot to do with familiarity and comfort. You know, we talk about in terms of athletics, you know, if somebody has their home field or home court advantage, you know, type of a thing, versus you know, someone being, you know, the opposing team is, you know, they're the visitors. So they're at a slight disadvantage sometimes. Well, think about it that way in terms of when you're going to talk with someone, to study with someone, if they're an insider, they feel comfortable being in the church, in the church building, at church events and things of that kind of nature. Okay? But outsiders, they might not feel as comfortable coming to a Bible study, for instance, at the church. You say, they might feel a whole lot more comfortable having the Bible study at their home. You say, so again, the location is really important. You know, sometimes we plan different events. We want to welcome people, you know, to certain events that we have, like Vacation Bible School, for instance. Well, you know, part of the whole thing with that is that it's not church. Okay? We're not inviting people to come to one of our normal, you know, worship services where, you know, we do all the things we do at worship service. This is something that is a different kind of an atmosphere that we invite outsiders to come in and just kind of experience the fellowship and the fun and the Bible teachings in an atmosphere that doesn't require them to kind of act like they're all holy and kind of pretend like something that they really aren't and makes them really uncomfortable. Okay? So again, what's going on and where it's going on, location is really important. Okay? In being able to decide how we're going to approach, whether it's insiders or outsiders. Any thoughts on that at all, Pat?
Wouldn't that all fall into both insiders and outsiders to go what you were talking about with their felt needs?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
If you go and you take time to get an idea of what their needs are, whether they're insiders or outsiders, you need to know how to apply Absolutely.
Absolutely. And again, you know, that's really, I think, the main key as we've been talking about, because people oftentimes will come and they have a felt need that they have, and that's what they oftentimes present, but that's not really what they need. Okay, that's what they want sometimes. That's what they feel like they need, but how we approach meeting their need is going to be determined in general about whether they're an insider or an outsider. Okay? Because again, it's a direct approach with an insider. You know, you can sit here and waste all kinds of time you want to, you know, talking about all this other stuff, but you know what you need to do because you know the Bible and you know what you're supposed to be doing, and what you're doing right now is not right, or whatever the case may be, if it's a rebuke that maybe or anything like that. But if you do that with an outsider, you just go and directly approach the real need instead of the felt need, that's not going to work very well. So yeah, felt needs and real needs need to always be at the top of the list of what we're looking, how we're going to approach them. Okay? What else? Okay, let's go back to the woman at the well and continue talking about the bridge that Jesus is building with her. Okay, again, outsider. This conversation that Jesus is having with her so far has brought her from what point did the conversation begin in terms of her opinion of Jesus?
He's a Jew.
Okay? He's a Jewish man who, like every other Jew, looks down upon Samaritans, and, you know, even to talk to a woman in public is not something that they would typically do. So, you know, here's another Jewish man that's, you know, wanting something from me. How do you think her lifestyle, and I want to spend a little bit of time on this morning, how do you think her lifestyle, okay, has might have affected her initial response to Jesus? Like this woman's mindset by this point in her life, when it comes to men in general. Yeah. Okay? She's been, you know, I mean, you know, she's been married how many times? Five times. Yeah, and now she's with a man that, you know, she's not even married to. If you just kind of go through and think about the process of this at that particular time, that in a lot of ways, I mean, just think about it, someone today, a woman today who's been married five times, you know, you have that first wedding ceremony and wow, everything is exciting, and here's the man for me, and, you know, he's chosen me, and I'm going to be his wife, and for whatever reason, you know, that didn't work. You know, this first husband, you know, took her to the door of her house and announces to the whole community, the whole town that where they're living, and saying three times to her, "I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you." Well, what does that mean to a woman in her day? Yeah. You know, what does she have to rely on now? She's perhaps, you know, not going to be able to go back home to live with her father. You say, if he's even still alive to support her and so forth, you know, the only option that she really would have is if she had a brother or someone, another male that would take care of her. Okay, but she's, you know, in a bad situation. But then, you know, comes along another man who, you know, decides that, you know, he wants to take her for a wife, and so she gets married, says maybe the second time will be better than the first, and all the hopes that I had from the first one will work out better, and this one will last. And then she finds herself after some period, we don't know, standing there at the door of her house with her second husband doing the same thing. I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. And this happens to her 5 times. You see. So by this time, I'll get to your question in just a second. By the time Jesus comes along, you see, and he says to her, you've had 5 husbands, and the man you're living with now is not your husband. It's almost like you kind of get a sense or a feeling, or you can, that, you know, she's been through this 5 times already, and she's at the point of, what's the point of getting married? What's the point in all of that? And so, you know, here's 6 men who have taken her and, you know, have not treated her the way that they should have treated her. And so now she's living with a man that won't even give her his name. Okay? And then she encounters Jesus, a Jewish man, that says, woman, give me something to drink. Here's another man, a Jewish man at that, just wants something. Right?
Well, I just wanted to say that women at that day and of that era were treated less than many animals. They just did not see some of the women that they should have been treated. I just couldn't understand the mindset of men and some instances. It hasn't changed. Particularly when it comes to certain things, equal pay or equal work. I mean, this kind of stuff is all not going. But certainly, I'm so glad that Jesus knew the situation, and he knew about it, and he could tell them what to do to get her out of the situation. And that was the main thing with him. That's one of the things I got from him. Because men of that era, if you go back to the Old Testament, see, in the Moses law, how they treated women, it was ridiculous. It was just plain on ridiculous. And I just cannot see it in the entire that type of mindset, but it's still old law in some instances.
I was thinking with her having these 5 husbands and now she's only living with a man, and I think of this day and time, you think about it, didn't she start feeling unworthy?
And then to
have an actual dude speak to her, whether, you know, at the time, you know, that was, to me, would be glory for me,
yeah.
You know, just to know that this male dude is speaking to me. And I'm already feeling unworthy with those that are supposed
right.
to be my family or
right.
people. But to me, I would think that would be like, I'm the lower.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's,
we're going to talk a little bit more about that in just a second here, because it's an important part of understanding this dialogue where it's getting ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Net.
I think that probably back in that day, maybe bad situations, specifically bad choices, sometimes maybe those bad choices, specifically bad situations, right? And that still happens.
Think about this woman, again, and I want you to kind of think about this in terms of, you know, where we're at in this bridge building between Jesus and this woman at the point in this conversation. Kind of get your mind wrapped around where this woman probably saw herself and why then Jesus would take this conversation the way that he does. So, you know, She's been married and divorced 5 times. She's with a man who, you know, won't even give her his name. She's also living in a town where the people don't want her around, right? You know, they don't want to have much to do with her because of her choices and her reputation and all of that and so forth. So how hopeless do you think this woman feels at this point? You know, pretty bad about herself. And Lynn Anderson, I like the way he talks about it in his book. He kind of paints this picture. We don't know this for sure. It's just will be speculation. 5 husbands, you know, however many years it has been or what have you, that perhaps maybe she's on her way, you know, to the well, trudging with her water jar, you know, to the well, perhaps maybe glad, feeling a little bit of relief from being able to get away from the house, for at least a little while. And so perhaps maybe she's not in a huge hurry to get to the well and get her water and get back because, you know, what's she going to get back to? The town that doesn't like her, and perhaps a husband that's using her. What about children? You know, maybe as she was on her way to the well, there's a trail of a couple of kids, you know, that are kind of tagging along behind her as she's, you know, making her way to the well. These children that, you know, perhaps maybe have, you know, fathers that all have different names and so forth from all the different relationships. Again, this is all just speculation, but we've seen how that kind of thing happens in our own world today. So it's not hard to imagine her in those kinds of similar circumstances. You say, a woman who really at this point in her life is really pretty hopeless. Okay, except for one thing. There is still one hope that she holds out, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. The bridge that Jesus is building in the conversation, it moves from water to relationships. Okay? Up to this point in the conversation, it's been about water. She went there to the well to draw water. Jesus uses that to start building this bridge. It's the felt need. I need water. I go to the well. I fill up my water jar, and I go back home with my water. Jesus introduces himself in the conversation about water by simply asking her to give him something to drink. Okay? And of course, as we've seen, the conversation begins on her part with, how is it that you, a Jew, can ask me, a Samaritan woman, for something to drink? Jesus' reply is, if you knew who it was that was asking you, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. Well, now he's kind of piqued her interest a little bit here in this, hasn't he? You know, living water, what is that? I've never heard of living water before. What's living water all about? Sir, the well is deep, and you don't have anything to draw water with. Okay, how are you going to give me some of this living water? You say, are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well? Okay. And so as this conversation continues on about the water and so forth, her expression is, give me some of this living water. You see that Jesus tells her to give this living water that will do what? It will spring up into a life spring, right? And you won't have to keep coming back, is what she wanted. I want some of this living water. Why? So I don't have to keep coming back and getting this water, right? Because Jesus tells her, anyone who drinks this water is going to be thirsty again, but anyone who drinks the water that I give him will never thirst. So you see, it's all still about the water, isn't it? I want some of this water so I don't have to keep coming back and getting more water all the time. Okay? And it's at that Jesus then changes the course of the conversation from talking about water to relationships. from felt needs to real needs. Okay, we see him moving from the one to the other when he makes the statement to her, go call your husband. Okay. Now, that statement on Jesus' behalf, it really, just as you read the narrative, it sounds just kind of awkward, doesn't it? It's kind of like the statement that he makes to Nicodemus. He say, when Nicodemus comes, as we said, and he says, Rabbi, we know you're from God. And Jesus says, unless you're born again, you're going, where'd that come from? You know? Well, you see, it's turning the conversation from the felt need to the real need. And that's what Jesus is doing here with her. Okay, let's talk about the real needs. The real needs is relationships. Go call your husband. Sir, I have no husband. The woman replies. And as we've been talking about, Jesus says, you're right in saying you have no husband. The truth is, you've had five husbands, and the man that you're presently living with is not your husband. Now, when Jesus revealed that he knew that to her, how do you think that made her feel?
Embarrassed, initially.
Okay. Perhaps embarrassed.
And then she realized that he might be a prophet.
How do you know this guy? This guy is talking in ways that are so unfamiliar to her. You see that there, that again, and it's Jesus' trademark, isn't it? We see him do this with so many people. The conversations that he has and the way that he addresses people are so unusual. You see, people aren't used to this kind of conversation. So she's recognizing, though this is kind of embarrassing to her, that there's something really special about this guy. He's talking about living water. I don't know what that is. There's something about this guy that he brings up into this conversation, this perfect stranger, that he knows all of this about me. How would he know that? Obviously, he's not from here because he's a Jew. So how would he know all this about me unless perhaps he was a prophet? Okay? Perhaps he is a prophet. Now, we need to understand that, you know, Jesus, in going in this route in the conversation with her, is not trying to trap her in order to kind of grind her into the dirt more and more than she already is. She's had plenty of that from her previous husbands and all of her neighbors. Okay? That's not what Jesus' intent is. What Jesus is doing here is moving closer and closer to close or to bridge that gap, say, with this particular topic. Again, her felt need is water, but her real need is relationship. And the only way to really address the issue of relationship, okay, is to go back to begin with all of those that haven't worked. Okay. He wanted her, I believe, to face her desperate situation and to know that there is hope. Because she was living in a hopeless situation. Okay? And what this woman needed in her relationships was hope. Okay? Restored hope. So, her response to Jesus, when he tells her about her relationships that she has had up to this point, is to turn the topic of conversation to where? Let's talk about worship. Okay. Now, we can look at this in two different ways. And the first one is that perhaps It's an attempt on her part to change the subject because, Jesus is getting a little too personal and I don't want to go there, so let's just change the subject, talk about something else. Okay? But it's also perhaps a glimmer of hope that she sees for the one that she has been waiting for. That is the Messiah. She's been downtrodden by everyone in her life, but she still held out hope for the Messiah to come. Keep in mind, who were the Samaritans? They're mixed breed. They are half Jew, okay, and half Gentile. So the Jewish part of them, you see, is still looking for the Messiah. They hold on to. Remember, how did she talk about Jacob? How did she refer to him as? Their father, you see. In other words, she's leaning on her Jewish ancestry. Okay? And so that part of the Jewish part of her has a hope in the coming Messiah. Look at what she says. We know that Messiah is coming. Right? That's hope. That's an expression of hope. You see? Why would she make such a statement to Jesus, this stranger at the well, under those circumstances?
I think you're dealing with the woman here whose self-worth is gone.
Right.
I know. She just... I mean, she wasn't even accepted by the religious leader or the people of the town.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here is somebody that possibly could be a prophet. And he seems to accept her. He seems to be really concerned with her needs and the standard in life that she's in. He knows her past. But also knowing her religious beliefs, I think she had hoped that there was one source where she would be accepted. In the present situation that she was in, she could be accepted. And I think that's why she was so inquisitive about, where do I truly worship? How do I truly worship? You know? And she was seeking those answers because, like you said, there was this hope of acceptance.
This guy at the well is different than other men that I've encountered. Not just husbands, but, I mean, think about it. When other men from the town, married or otherwise, wanted to have the pleasures of a woman, do you think that they might have approached her? Because of her reputation, you know, she doesn't care who she speaks to. When perhaps other strangers that were traveling through town, other Samaritans that would come through, and men that might be lonely and looking for someone to comfort them while they're on their journey, they inquired of people in the village, where can I, you know, find some female entertainment, do you think that maybe anyone in the town might have said, well, you know, there's a woman down the street down here. So again, the point is that her concept of men and the way that she has been treated by men, you know, it's got to be just really terrible, okay? But here's a man who's treating her so differently. Say, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers say that the place to worship is on this mountain. You do say the place to worship is in the temple of Jerusalem, which is the right place. And Jesus then, in approaching, you know, this closing this gap with her, addresses her question concerning worship. Now, you know, if you just stop and think about, you know, her train of thought along this line, you know, there had to be some particularly strong reason why she would turn the topic to that of worship of God. today. And I think that, as I said a while ago, I think that, that probably the reason is because people have treated her terribly, and the one hope that she has in her life is God and the coming Messiah that's been promised. Okay? That's what she's really looking for. And has that hope for that. In this conversation as it goes, and I want to try to finish this up here, we move on in our study. Let's talk about the end results of these two conversations. The conversation that Jesus has with Nicodemus, we read through the remainder of chapter 3 of John's Gospel. We don't really hear anything else about Nicodemus until chapter 7 of John's Gospel. Okay, when Jesus is there teaching at the feast, and he, you know, has some things that people aren't really liking to hear, especially the religious leaders and so forth. They're wanting, you know, plotting and all these things. In chapter 7, verses 50-52, John tells us Nicodemus, who had gone to Jesus earlier, and who was one of their own, that is, of the members of the Sanhedrin, asked, "Does our law condemn anyone without first hearing him to find out what he is doing?" So Nicodemus speaks up on this occasion on behalf of Jesus. Okay? And then we don't hear about Nicodemus again until chapter 19 and verse 39, where we see him helping Joseph of Arimathea taking down the body of Jesus from the cross. Okay? The Samaritan woman, okay, her response to Jesus in all of this, and this is really interesting. Don't miss this point. What did she do? Okay. What did she do before that? Did they notice? Read the narrative. What does it say she did? At the end of the conversation, she did what? She left her water jar. Do you think that John just kind of put that in there just kind of as a little footnote there or what have you? No, that's an important issue. Why did she go to the well to begin with? To get water. That was her felt need. But when she left the well, she left her water jar there. Okay. Jesus had bridged the gap and helped her to see the difference between her felt need and her real need, which was relationships. And primarily with her relationship with the Messiah. "Sir, I know that Messiah is coming," she said to Jesus. Right? And Jesus said to her, what? "I that am speaking to you am He." Do you realize, okay, think about this. This half-breed Samaritan woman who's had five husbands and is living with a man she's not married to at this time, this outcast in her own town, is the first person that Jesus identified himself as the Messiah to. The first person. It wasn't to the insider Pharisee. It was to this woman. "I that speak to you am He."
She
recognized him. Well, she recognized him as a prophet, and you know, she's looking, this hope is just really bubbling up inside of her. You know, this Messiah is coming. "Sir, tell me about this." And he identifies himself as the one she has her hope in.
And Ross, I think that's the key point. I think Jesus saw that desperate hope.
Oh, yeah.
In her for that Messiah, and that's why he said that.
Absolutely. That's what she needed. The relationship with God. She didn't need water from the well. She needed a relationship of living water with the Messiah. And that's why he identified himself to her as such. I who speak to you am he. The result then is that she left her water jar there. That thing that kind of identified her felt need, she left it there. And she ran back to the town and told the townspeople what? Come see a man who's told me everything I've ever done. Could this be the Messiah? Could this really be the Messiah? The one we've been waiting for? And the whole town came out to meet Jesus. Okay. Listen to the words of this outcast woman. And they begged Jesus to stay with them. He did. The end result was what? They believed. They said, we no longer believe because of your testimony. But they had seen and heard for themselves.
She had conviction because she gave up all of her humility to tell the people,
yeah.
He knows about me. Y'all know about me.
Yeah.
He knows about me.
Yeah. How tempting could it have been for her to just keep that secret to herself?
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell these people that have been treating me really badly all this time. What do I care about them? That hope that she had that was filled in being the Messiah that she'd been waiting for compelled her to go and share that with the whole town. These people have been treating her badly for so long.
But also by looking at how bad it is, she said, come see a man who's told me about the street. They really didn't have to go. Because they, the way she was, but maybe the way she, her conviction and how she was and the excitement that she had, they wanted to see.
Yeah.
But I mean, the way how much and how fast they were going to make it.
Crazy women. They saw something different in her that day.
Well, it also showcases the difference between the people that had a lot to lose and the people that had nothing left to lose.
Yeah.
She had nothing left to lose but, her relationship with God. And she clung to this with all that she had left. And this, I think, is exactly what Jesus saw in her.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all about moving her from the felt need of water to the real need of relationship, that primary relationship with the Messiah. Okay, thank you all very much. We'll continue on next week.
Thank you.